what I really like to do is I'd really try to analyze this without a lot of the fluff and a lot of the rhetoric. Because when you're
without
talking,
too much makeup and a frilly dress on, is that
correct.
What you're trying to say, Jackson?
That's very correct.
I appreciate that you want to. No, and I'm being a little bit comedic because. You know, we do want to be fair. We want to be level-headed about this. But this is a topic that is, I mean, I've told you before, it's near and dear to my heart. I've got family members who enjoy drag. I've got family members who are gender fluid and discovering who they want to be as a human being. I've got family members that are full trans and have already undergone surgical procedures. This is, I mean, I'm talking about immediate family that I see on a constant, regular basis.
Right.
So when these people are the target of politically motivated attacks, I find it hard to be level headed and to be have empathy for the other side.
Well, I think what's going on, Spike, is that we are living in or with the kind of ghost of Anita Bryant. Do you remember Anita Bryant? Do you remember this?
Oh, the Florida orange juice sunshine queen
correct.
Who lost everything in
correct.
Her career? Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, correct. So, and if, for those of you who don't know, Anita Bryant was a Miss America beauty type lady, and she was a singer, and she was living in Florida, and she was hawking orange juice and making jingles and whatnot. And at a certain point in time, she got some notoriety for making the claim that homosexuality, that homosexual men were trying to recruit children because homosexual men could not reproduce. The only way that they were able to create more homosexuals was to, you know, engage with them in nefarious activities.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Anita Bryant was wrong about that, but she talked about it for years. And you can go back and you can, as I have, and you can see Anita Bryant being interviewed, giving speeches, and she's talking about this theory. Now, we now know in the light of science that the genetic, environmental, and other factors come into play when somebody is gay. There is no gay gene in the same way that there is no straight gene. But there are complex things that occur within the brain, neurobiologic phenomenon that produce someone's perception of self, right? Now, we all know that this is rooted in science, and anybody who thinks like Anita Bryant is, you know, thinking in terms of what, with it being incorrect from 50 years ago, right? You know,
yeah,
it's just wrong.
I'd say that.
But there are people now who continue with that message. That dead old message from Anita Bryant, only now instead of talking about homosexual people, they're talking about trans people and they're talking about drag queens. And what I find so sad about it is that there is no evidence to suggest that any of this is true. And yet people continue to hammer down on it. Now, I think that people hammer down on it, Spike, largely because it is such a complicated topic that it is easy to try to distill it down in so many ways and make it something of that elicits a disgust response. It elicits an anger response. And when you have a propaganda machine out there, I won't mention the name of the company, but there are propaganda machines out there who every single day put out anti-trans or anti-drag queen propaganda. And so what people take in is this distorted view of what actually occurs within the trans community and the drag community, and they don't actually have a grounded sense of what we're looking at here, right? Like, do you remember the claim, Spike, from 2 years ago that the head of the Drag Queen Story Hour group had been arrested for child pornography? Do you remember this claim?
I remember it.
Right. So if people – and this is something that is repeated to this day. To this day, you – and again, I won't mention these people's names, but they have a very large online – media conglomerate that they do. They will say to this day that there was a man who was arrested on charges of child pornography who was one of the heads of Drag Queen Story Hour, and that's not true. He was a contractor for a nonprofit that donated to Drag Queen Story Hour. He was tangentially connected at best.
Mm-hmm.
But these myths go out there and they keep getting repeated. And then you have people on Twitter who like to hammer down on this, and you have just the scum of the earth out there who are picking on a minority community who's at the highest risk of being murdered and at the highest risk of suicidality. And they are encouraging people in so many ways, maybe not explicitly, but implicitly, to go and take quote unquote action around this because something needs to be done. So we say all that because over the weekend, a bunch of neo-Nazis, and I'm not saying that as a pejorative, I'm saying that because these are literal neo-Nazis, chanting Sieg Heil, went to a drag queen story event, and they decided to try to shut it down.
Well, this is a public park in Ohio.
Correct. And they went up to the group, and there's footage of this online where they're flashing guns at some of the people who are trying to protect these kids and protect these trans perform, these drag performers. And what's so sad about this, Spike, is that these people have been, I don't know, amplified to such a degree. They've been bolstered to such a degree. They've been encouraged to such a degree by people who don't know what they're talking about, that these are people who are willing to go and threaten these people with violence and these children with violence, right? Like, you bring a gun to an event that's meant for children and you point it at people. It, I mean, one of those kids could have gotten killed. So I don't have a lot of sympathy for people, specifically political commentators or political pundits or political representatives, who are using either drag queen story hour or trans people as a method to gin up their base, whether it's their viewership base or their voter base. I have no sympathy for them whatsoever, because their words result in this, right? This is the end result of all the rhetoric and all the bigotry and all the hatred, is neo-Nazis coming out of the woodwork and saying, hey, we're with those guys. We agree with those guys. We got to shut this down, right?
Well, at this event in Ohio were, you know, the members of Proud Boys, Patriot
Correct.
Front, White
yeah.
Lives Matter, as
yeah.
well as, you know, Christian groups. You know, there were people in this crowd that weren't violent, weren't vulgar, weren't neo-Nazis. They had a religious objection to Drag Queen Story Hour. But when you stand next to people who, I hate to do this, but who chant,
get the ball, get the rope!
Get the ball, get the rope!
Stay!
Oh!
Stay!
Oh!
Right.
Stay!
When you stand next to those people, you will be painted with that brush. Well, you know, if I'm going to protest something and someone yeah. comes like that to join my protest, I'm not there anymore.
Right.
I'm either they're not there anymore, or I'm right. not going to, it doesn't, no matter how passionate I am about an issue, I am very for the LGBTQ, trans, and drag communities.
Sure.
Like I said, I've got my kid this weekend will go to an 18 and over drag brunch this yeah. weekend. With friends. You know, these are young college kids who just enjoy the medium, the entertainment medium of drag. And if I got to tell you, if that kind of thing, the day that kind of element interferes with my child's ability to live her life, their right. life, excuse me, I'm learning, their life in a safe and open and free way, the same freedoms they want on that side, I want for my child. The day that group shows up, that's the day I'm involved.
Right. And I think that's a really good point, though, Spike, is that we used to have this idea in conservatism, which was live and let live. I want to live and let live. Right. This is going back. This is William F. Buckley type stuff. We want to be left alone. We want our churches left alone. We want our institutions left alone. Thank you very much. And we'll let you do whatever you want to do. That has changed over the last, I want to say, 6 years. Where now it's, no, we're going to get in your business. We want your business to be our business. This is how Michael Knowles can get up on stage at CPAC and he can say that we need to quote unquote ban transgenderism an unbelievable amount of applause. The 300 yeah. people that were at CPAC.
Yeah. I mean, he had unanimous support.
Right. And so ideas that were previously considered to be not conservative, right? And these very kind of authoritarian ideas, these were antithetical to American conservatism and something that you might see much more in Eastern European conservatism, now are being adopted by many of my friends in the conservative right. And I think to myself, this is not the route to go down when you're literally standing next to neo-Nazis as a quote-unquote conservative Christian, and you're attempting to shut down this event. That's not a place where you want to be, right?
Right.
And moreover, Spike, I mean, you think about the kind of, freedom and independence that we enjoy in the United States. Ron DeSantis decided to pull the Hyatt Regency's liquor license following a drag show with children present. Now, they weren't committed. No crime has been committed.
Well
they have,
go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, this particular show, and I've spoken of this show before, because I think the people who, and it was an element of RuPaul's Drag Race, the Drag Queen Christmas, featuring right. former performers on RuPaul's Drag Race,
shouldn't have been there.
Well, no, it should have been there, but they billed it as an all ages show.
Shouldn't have been there.
You mean it right. should have been at the hotel?
No, I'm saying that the kids shouldn't have been there.
No, kids absolutely should not have been there. They
yeah.
and they got in trouble in multiple markets.
Right.
By having this particular show billed as an all-ages show. I mean, my kid's going to this thing on Saturday. It's an adult entertainment. I mean, there is adult drag. There is
yes.
sexually provocative drag. And
right.
then there are drag queen story hours.
Right.
And they are not the same thing. They should not be in the same boat.
So, and this is where I find an issue with this, though, and this is where I kind of want to give people a fair shake, because this performance, kids should not be in this performance.
No way.
Right?
Or at this performance. Right? No, it's a sexual, they make sexual jokes.
Right.
They have, they have sexually suggestive dancing.
Right. So, but then rather than, and this is where my, kind of, my nuanced brain kicks in, rather than DeSantis coming out and saying, that's not going to happen, I don't want to see that, and we're going to, you know, ensure that this show is always going to be 18 plus, you know, years,
right,
18
right.
plus. Instead, what he does, he goes after the venue's liquor license, and he pulls their liquor license. And, right? It just seems kind of bizarre to me. Like, don't, if you wanted to try to solve the problem, a problem that 90% of reasonable and rational people could get behind, you would say, well, we need to ensure that this show is treated the same way that an R-rated movie is treated.
Right. Or my daughter or my kid, I'm getting better at this, I swear. So, look, there's adult comedy, not whether drag or straight or, there's adult comedy shows kids don't go to. There's adult burlesque shows that are completely sexual with women undressing, and kids shouldn't go there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You got to be, and when a drag performance, you know, does an all ages show, that you are feeding the other side's argument. You are giving Ron DeSantis the winning hand in pulling somebody's liquor license because there were kids at a show that should not have been an all ages show.
But here's the other question I'll ask you, Spike, and this is what I find to be particularly irritating. Who at that venue decided that kids should be able to go see that show? Do you know what I mean? And this is where I really fall in line with a lot of my conservative friends who say, I don't want to see kids at that show. And I say, I don't want to see kids at that show.
I agree completely. And I think the problem is with the show itself should never have billed itself as an all ages show. And that show having had trouble in multiple markets across the country, when the venue, when the Hyatt Regency should know what the content is and know that they are inappropriately building it as an all ages show. The Hyatt Regency should not have had that show as an all ages show.
I think there needs to be more of I don't know, calling it out from people who are pro trans, pro drag.
Yeah.
There needs to be more people who are calling out this kind of behavior on that side of the spectrum.
Agreed.
Because when you have this kind of unified front and you don't acknowledge when something is wildly inappropriate like this show, I think it proves people's suspicions and their biases that you are actually trying to indoctrinate children. I saw a video the other day from the UK where, I mean, you had drag performers in front of infants in costumes that I wouldn't go see that. Do you know what I mean? It was so
sexual
risque.
Suggestive. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, and I was listening to the nutbag talk about why he was doing this in front of children, and I thought, that's not a person who should be in front of children. But then what happens is then people conflate that circumstance with a guy who's clearly deviant, who probably should not be around children, with the woman who's dressed like Cruella de Vil,
right?
Or the woman who's dressed like
Ursula reading The Little Mermaid to kids at a library.
Right, exactly. And so they conflate the performers who actually care, who, or let us just say it's a drag performer who's dressed up like David Bowie and singing Life on Mars.
Right.
They take the two and they put them in the same basket. And this is not the way to talk about this issue, right? Where one is like Disney princesses and one is fun and charming. And then the other one is just gross. No offense to those fine people. No, I'm sure they're fine performers.
It's adult. But, it's right, adult. Yeah.
Right.
You know, and there's a market for that. There's an appropriate audience for that.
Right.
And when you don't, and when you make it an all-ages show that is clearly an adult content show, you are killing your own side's argument. And you are feeding guys like Ron DeSantis, who wants to take this and make this a political issue. I mean, Tennessee just banned all drag performances in public places or where they can be viewed by kids.
Right.
Not adult drag performances, which would have been appropriate. Which is the kind of law that we need to place. Because, you know, there are things that kids shouldn't see. R-rated movies.
Yeah.
Adult comedy. I wouldn't take a kid to a Lenny Bruce show. And you know, I got to tell you, I wouldn't take a kid to a, Megan Thee Stallion Cardi B concert because they're going to sing the number one song, which I can't read the lyrics on the radio. I'd lose my job.
I mean, I wouldn't take a kid to Hooters. Do you know what I mean? I wouldn't. I would feel pretty weird about that.
A lady, a guy in drag reading a storybook is grooming, but taking your toddler and dressing them up in a little, they sell little Hooters uniforms for
girls. Yeah,
you want to talk about sexualizing children? How about kid beauty pageants?
Weird. weird.
with more hair, makeup, you know, and gowns at the age of six.
Yeah.
I mean, there are valid concerns with what our children should be exposed to, when they should be exposed to them. Valid concerns. But to target a community, like you had mentioned, is already being targeted with violence, already has a high rate of violence against that community, a high rate of suicide among that community. A group of people who are just trying to feel the best about themselves. And yes, there are outliers in every group. There are priests that shouldn't be around kids. I wouldn't paint all priests with that brush. I wouldn't begin to. There are conservatives who show up at drag queen story hours that are completely inappropriate. I wouldn't paint all conservatives with that brush. I wouldn't do it. To paint all drag queens as inappropriate for children, as groomers, such a disservice to not just that community, but the constituency you're peddling this to.
And that's why I mentioned Anita Bryant at the beginning of this segment, because they've fallen back on the Anita Bryant method of criminalizing and judging everybody within a group, right? So Anita Bryant went around and she said all homosexual men are deviants and they're all, you know, attempting to corrupt your children. That was her line for years and years and years. And so now, 50 years later, we see the exact same logic with no nuance, with no subtlety, with no understanding by mainstream conservative figures. And to me, it is a – I think it's old. I think it's going to get boring. And I think that people are going to realize that they're being misled in so many ways.
Well, they realize that with the gay community now. They're going to realize that with the drag community. But I would like to say really quickly, I understand why the people who buy this argument – I understand why they buy this argument. You're talking about my kid. You're talking about somebody coming after my kid. That's why it's such a winning message.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's what it is, too, that you have these deviants out there who are coming for your children, and they're all doing it at the same time, which is why we need to ban it all, right?
Right.
So, in the fallout of many smaller community banks over the last about week, would you say, Spike? Maybe week and a half?
Yeah, about that. It was late last week that SVB went under.
A lot of people are trying to figure out who's to blame. Now, Spike, you and I did what I can very humbly say was an award-winning analysis of SVB and the... who's laughing in the background? Did I hear somebody laughing in the background?
It's the Edward R. Murrow Award Committee. They're in the room.
I'm watching Rick and Morty over here.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So we did an analysis of the Dodd-Frank decision and the Glass-Steagall decision, and we got nothing but praise from people. You know, go back and listen to that show. It was really quite amazing. It was groundbreaking, Spike, to listen to me talk about the banking industry in such a fluid and comprehensive way, right?
I believe that example is being taught in community colleges coast to coast.
Yeah,
today.
Exactly. So people are still trying to figure out, despite my analysis, people are still trying to figure out why the SVB bank closed and why there were other banks out there that have also closed. Now, we went over the deregulation that occurred in 2018 and the deregulation that took over, preceding that from Donald Trump. And a lot of people weren't on board with that. A lot of people didn't like that answer. They didn't like that kind of analysis. James Cormer, Republican out of Kentucky, part of the House Oversight Committee, he's blaming woke banks. And here's what that sounded like.
And then we see now coming out that they were one of the most woke banks in their quest for the ESG type policy and investing. You know, this could be a trend, and there are consequences for bad Democrat policy. And I think we need to keep an eye on all the banking sector right now.
Okay, so a woke bank, this is a new kind of a way to go about this, I suppose. You know, we can talk about complicated things like 10-year bonds or 5-year bonds, interest rates at 1% versus 5%. We could talk about that, Spike, and we could be very big brain about it. Or we could be smooth brain, and we could say it's the woke agenda, right? That little
Well, here's my problem with your analysis of where we stand today. You said people are still trying to figure out why this happened.
Yeah.
That's not what Cormer cares about. He doesn't care about why this happened. His focus is on how can I blame this on my political opponent?
Well, and I would also say that it is, because it is such a complicated issue for so many people, it's a lot easier to use boilerplate, bumper sticker phrases like woke bank to try to explain what is otherwise a very complicated thing to people. And well, people, you know, just kind of eat it up, right?
Well, you're right. They do. That's the buzzword. That's the hot word that gets his constituency on his side and dug in against the other side, the word woke. Right. And I got to tell you, of some of the explanations that I've heard that woke banking was the cause of this, Comer sounds vaguely intelligent compared to some of the things I've heard out there. You know, it was Stephen Miller, former Trump administration official, who said they're spending so much time worried about, you know, equity, inclusion, diversity issues, right, that they're not paying attention to good banking rules. You know, Junior said that, you know, never mind. I was going to quote Don Junior, but we don't have that kind of time. We don't waste the time. Comer sound really smart.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I've been hearing a lot is people are saying, well, they had women, Spike O'Neill, and they had...
Right, they had a gay man
on the board, and they had a black individual on the board, and it's this woke bank and this is what occurred because they were a diverse community bank, and that's what took it down. And I was thinking to myself, Spike, that this is a sad thing for me to hear. Being that 10 years ago, if you went on 4chan or if you went on Reddit and you went to what the kind of the white supremacist kind of alt-right guys and gals were saying, is they were saying that diversity is the thing that is ruining this country. And they were saying that when you put individuals in positions in a bank because they are black or because they are gay or because they are a woman, you will ruin that bank or that institution, whether it's the military or government or whatever it is. And what was so weird about that is 10 years ago, that was fringe. That was considered to be fringe and extremist.
Right.
And now you have mainstream, not only representatives, but political commentators out there who are saying this as if it's a casual thing that everybody should be talking about. Whereas previously, this was, you know, the rebel flag in the background and, you know, someone talking to Richard Spencer about this. Now you have political pundits who are making these claims. And I find it disturbing that that is how far we have gotten in our analysis of something that is as complicated as the financial institutions in our country, to blame minority people for the fall of that bank. It's quite sad.
And when Comer was quoting the ESG, which is what? The ecology, social issues, and corporate governance. Those are kind of factors, a lens that corporations are trying to look through to make sure that their investments, their corporate work, doesn't destroy the economy, has social, you know, value to society in general, and that they're using good governing practices in how they run their corporation. Now, what would stop ESG from taking over a bank and how they run their bank and how they lend their money and what kind of risks they involve? What would stop that? Regulations. I mean, the irony is like almost, it hits you in the face.
Well, yeah, and rather than people going back and saying, well, maybe Donald Trump shouldn't have, you know, rolled the regulations back in 2018, rather than saying that and analyzing that and the fallout from that, you somehow find a way to blame woke people who have nothing to do with the way that a bank is regulated. It's like we live in a circus world, Spike O'Neill. And keep in mind, I am under the impression that we shouldn't regulate a lot of things, right? Government regulation bugs me to no end. Like, I want to have a fence in front of my house that's above 3 feet. I don't think I need government coming in and telling me
that it's got to be 4'1". Yeah, I know that is ridiculous. Right. But you also want clean, safe water coming in. So sometimes regulations ain't the worst thing going.
Right. So, and this is what I find so frustrating about it, is that James Comer is not a stupid guy. He's not. And I think this is where we get into partisan politics. Whereas rather than saying, well, let's reflect on Donald Trump, it's let me just throw out this buzzword and I'll just move on from it.
Well, right? Or he could be saying, hey, you know what? When the Fed raises interest rates 5-6 times and causes banks to dip into their reserves and pull cash out of a bank, this is what's going to happen. That is a valid and arguable point of view.
Yes.
But the problem is his constituents don't react to inflation or interest rate hikes or all those things. They hear woke. They want to hear woke.
Woke.
They want to hear woke.
And by the way, I mean, Spike, this is my favorite game. I don't think anybody knows what it actually means. And you and I have talked about this now 3 or 4 times, but I love coming back to this. I don't think that anybody knows what it means. And certainly not conservative pundit Bethany Mandel.
Oh, this is embarrassing.
I have talked about Bethany. I've tried to avoid talking about Bethany on my YouTube channel because I feel like it's not fair to speak about her because she's not very good at this, but I'll do it now. This is what she was on the show Rising.
She was in enemy territory.
Yes,
on the show Rising. And right. And I give host to the credit to the host who, when she started throwing the W word around, she said, well, do me a favor. Can hopefully that's in the clip. We'll play this.
Would you mind defining, Will, because it's come up a couple times, and I just want to make sure we're on the same page.
So, I mean, woke is sort of the idea that...
Oh, no.
Yeah, it hurts.
This is going to be one of those moments that goes viral. I mean, woke is something that's very hard to define, and we've spent an entire chapter defining it. It is sort of the understanding that we need to totally reimagine and redo society in order to create hierarchies of oppression.
No, that's not what it means.
and to your point, I'm sure Bethany Mandel is a very intelligent person. She's written a whole chapter on this. I'm sure she's done her homework, and she can make a valid argument for her side of the issue. But, you know, on the spot, and we didn't add any pauses to that. We didn't doctor that. You can find that clip globally, you know, and when you say, oh, this is going to go viral, that lights a fuse.
Yeah. All right. So somebody posted... talking about, what is it, studying abroad, right, Spike?
Yeah, a NYU student posted, and when I say posted, I think she tweeted.
Tweeted.
About how, which is nowadays a post. And don't get me wrong, there have been valid news stories broken through Twitter. I mean, it does have validity. There are responsible journalists who use Twitter as a very effective medium to get to their audience immediately. It is an absolute tool. And so is this student. This girl is studying in you know, Florence, Italy, studying abroad. Can you imagine, a lot of us never got the option of studying abroad. I mean, international travel, I think, is the most valuable thing anybody can do. To see the world outside of their little corner. And don't get me wrong, some people never leave their hometown. They're Andy, Opie, and Barney. but to see the rest of the world gives you such a valuable perspective on where we stand as a society and as a culture in America. How lucky we are. Even on the worst days we ever have, 99% of the planet would trade places with us in a heartbeat. And here's this girl who's lucky enough, dare I say privileged enough, to travel abroad and spend a semester in Florence, Italy. And all she does is complain about how rude the Italian people are, about, I'm so sick of traveling every weekend. And maybe this girl is just clickbaiting me. Maybe this story is just her way to get international attention. You cued me in, Jack Stein.
Yes.
What do you call that? Spotlighting or?
Oh, signal boosting.
Signal boosting. Maybe she's playing. And I'm old. I don't understand how the Twitter works. I don't know what a twit is.
No, wait. Spikes. Yeah. Signal boosting is something that people who are already known. We'll talk about
maybe
it.
Maybe this isn't a good example. See, again, I don't know what Twitter is. I don't know how to signal boost.
So wait, let me. This girl talks about, you know, how she's having a hard time studying abroad. And then...
the most unlikely counter argument you can possibly imagine...
Yes.
From a spokesperson for foreign exchange students, that if you gave me 1,000 shots, I wouldn't pick this person as the spokesperson for foreign exchange students, none other than local Amanda Knox.
Right.
Whose roommate was murdered in Italy.
Yeah.
And was put on trial in a just a horrific, almost third world trial, a trial that was designated for the tabloids specifically.
Right.
I mean, she was painted to be the harlot of all harlots, and the prosecutor was a tabloid, you know, journalism star, and this poor girl was looking at the rest of her life in a foreign jail.
Right. So we're talking about someone who spent 4 years in prison following a wrongful conviction after her British flatmate Meredith Kircher was murdered. And so what's so interesting is that Amanda Knox would chime in. She would see this, you know, Twitter post from this very well-off young lady who is obviously not very grateful for the many blessings in her life in Florence. And then she would come in and she would say, what are you talking about? traveling abroad.
Really? I've had the worst international travel experience of all time. When you look up horrible international travel experiences, my picture pops up, and I still know the value of seeing an international perspective.
So Spike, what is your Amanda Knox story?
Well, first off, we were doing morning radio when this story happened. So, and she was a local kid. So it was all about, you know, the local community cared and was invested in this kid's tragic ordeal from being arrested, wrongly convicted, fighting for justice, and eventually released. Then she took a job in the coffee shop in the lobby of our radio station building. And I felt horrible because people just would, it was like the, you know, Bobo the gorilla at the Tacoma Mall.
Was
people. Yes. And the poor thing, you could tell that she was still PTSD and out the wazoo on her experience. And she was just trying to have a normal job at a coffee shop. And I made polite conversation with her a couple of times, never brought up what I do, never asked her about her life, just out of respect. You know, now she's on, you know, she speaks internationally. She was in Modena, Italy, 2 years ago, speaking on criminal justice and criminal justice reform. I mean, she's embraced the tragedy of her experience and working to make it a good thing. So when somebody comes out and says, oh, it's such a problem, international study is horrible, and I've got to go drink wine, and I hate wine, whatever. To have Amanda Knox step up and say, look, you know, even under the worst circumstances, a global perspective, an international experience is so worth your time. I just thought it was the least likely spokesperson for international study of all time felt the need to speak up.